Now let's understand the concept of learning. We all are learning throughout our life in a way, and we say that even an organization should be a learning organization. So what exactly we mean by learning? Is education learning? Is acquiring skills learning? Is attitudes learning? Then what is learning? Learning is basically acquired by experience, where there is a change of behavior. Unless the change in behavior is occurring due to knowledge, acquisition of knowledge, skills or behavior, you have not learned. Once your behavior is changed based on your experience and it is applied in any situation in future, then only you have learned. For example, suppose you are a salesman for consumer goods. You have learned how to sell those consumer goods by giving the details of the consumer good you are selling, by giving the positive aspect of their consumer goods, the benefits the consumer will get by acquiring those goods, the qualities of that goods, the long-lasting benefits of these goods, the warranties and guarantees one can think of about those goods, etc., etc., and convince the customer to buy those goods because he has learned from his senior about the various aspects of this consumer good, and he is telling those things by his learning from that senior, and he is able to sell that consumer good to the customer, and his sale for that consumer good in a month has exceeded his target. So the superior feels that yes, he is a good salesman. And now suppose that company, being a diversified company, he sends the same salesman to sell the washing machine instead of the consumer good, like say soap or biscuits or whatever he was selling earlier, and see whether he is able to convince the customer or not. Suppose he is able to convince the customer for any other product or service also, it means that he has really learned, that has changed his behavior. But if not, only by rectifying or memorizing those things about that particular product he was able to sell them, then it means that he has not learned. So change in behavior is very important, and it should not be only by certain aspect. Say suppose you have got injury to your leg and it has deformed, and now it can give the movement in some other direction than the normal, then that is not learning, right? So it should change in behavior, which should be relatively permanent. Today you have learned something, and after 6 months or a year, suppose you are totally forgetting that, then it is not learning. So change in behavior, which is relatively permanent, is an important aspect in learning. So as far as the work-related learning techniques are concerned, there can be action learning, where by doing certain things you are learning. It can be coaching, where by telling the same thing to your subordinate, your own thing is multiplied in a way and it becomes more firm in your mind and you can apply it. Mentoring, where you are a senior person, a leader, who is going to handhold the junior person who enters the organization, guides him, supports him, and it also helps him in his career development, then it's a mentoring type of thing. Then there are peer relationships, where you are teaching your colleagues about your experience because you have tackled that kind of problem earlier. Then there are learning logs, where you are entering everything that you have learned by your experience and all, and then it can be utilized by others. And there are various theories of learning which in organizational behavior they are described in detail. Let's learn them in brief. These theories are classical learning, which has been developed by Ivan Pavlov, operant learning, which have been developed by B.F. Skinner, cognitive learning, and social learning. Social learning is developed by various people. So let's understand these various theories in some detail. What is classical learning? Classical learning is one where a stimulus is given, you get a response. Suppose a dog is given mutton, he will eat that and be happy. So when he just sees the mutton, he starts salivating. Now suppose you ring a bell, the dog is never going to salivate because it's something which is not connected to food. But when you ring the bell just prior to giving him mutton, he correlates this, and gradually after 2-3 times he starts salivating with the ringing of the bell before the mutton arrives. And at times, even if the mutton doesn't arrive, the dog is likely to salivate. So that is a classical kind of learning that's occurring in dogs. So stimulus response, and then comes a conditioned stimulus and conditioned response that is occurring in this dog. Similar kind of things do occur in the organizations. For example, when the superior boss comes from the head office to the factory, the managers in that factory, when they know in advance that on a particular day the boss is going to come, they start doing housekeeping in much better way. They clean the windows, doors and everything. They clean the floors and keep it very up to date as far as the housekeeping is concerned. And the people there are observing this. So, whenever the superior comes, usually the clearing of windows, doors, etc. starts, and usually the people working there are more sincere in their work in a way. They are sitting on their desk, working sincerely so that nobody should get a complaint. So, after 2-3 months, every 15 days, suppose this is happening, after 2-3 months, suppose the superior in the factory feels like doing a housekeeping work, they start cleaning the windows and everybody becomes very silent, everybody starts working very sincerely there. It's a kind of conditioned response that is given to the conditioned stimulus of cleaning the windows and doors. Similarly, on the road, whenever the inspector, RTO inspector, goes in a particular jeep, all the RTOs standing on the road are going to salute him. At times, when there is no RTO inspector sitting in the jeep also, the RTOs on the road are going to salute to the jeep itself. So this is a kind of classical learning that's occurring. The second one is operant learning. Well, there is not too much of significance of classical learning in the office, I mean the work area, but yes, it has got some significance, no doubt about that. Then comes operant learning, that is environmental learning. The person is understanding what is the ideal thing to do in such circumstances. B.F. Skinner has done an experiment with a rat where he developed a zigzag type of thing with in which the rat can go, and when the rat is going to pull the lever, the rat is going to get the food. The rat is in one corner, the lever is in some other corner, and there are a lot of zigzag pathways which the rat, after doing multiple trials, understands and goes there, pulls the lever, and he gets the food pellet, he enjoys the food, goes back, again comes there, again pulls the lever, again gets this. So this is a kind of operant learning, that through the environmental exploration, a person is going to understand what is beneficial for that person. That's how he learns. It is a kind of reinforcement that is occurring when he pulls the lever, he is getting the food. So the operant learning involves positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, punishment and extinction. These are the four aspects which can come into this. A positive reinforcement is one where by doing certain thing, a positive thing occurs to that person, that's why he repeats that. For example, when a child is learning how to walk, the mother always gives positive reinforcement to the child. Even if the child falls, the mother will appreciate and tells, very good, come for, just get up, come forward by one step, two steps, and she pats the back of the child whenever he goes slightly ahead also. So that's a positive reinforcement the mother is giving to the child. At times, she starts giving a chocolate or something which the child loves whenever he is doing something good in his behavior. He may give some or the other gift when a child is getting some better marks in the exam also. So these are all positive reinforcement. On the other hand, negative reinforcement is something which is not given when he does that. So the child learns automatically, I should not do this. And punishment is something where he has done something grossly wrong, the parents do not like, at times the parents slap or the teacher slaps the student because of the gross mistake he is doing or because it is not done as per the expectation of how he should have done. So that's a punishment that occurs and the child then does not do that in future at times. So positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, punishment, and the fourth one is extinction. Extinction, that means the person stops behaving that way. Which means, one simple example can be, when a teacher is teaching the students, and out of, say, 60 students are there in the class, 2-3 students ask question, and the teacher does not answer, he continues his lecture. Once it occurs, second time it occurs, third time it occurs, 4-5 times it occurs and the students stop asking questions. So the behavior of asking questions by the students become extinct when they are not getting any response. So this is the operant learning through the environment. A person is learning like this, and a cognitive learning is, say, when we are working for full month, we are getting the salary. When we work extra, and based on our performance, at times we are getting a performance-linked pay or a bonus. That's a kind of operant learning that we get. So, then comes cognitive learning, where by understanding certain things, we are doing that and we are learning further and further. Say mathematics, etc. is more of cognitive learning, understanding and all. Science, where we are doing experiments and learning. Then comes social learning, where we are learning from others' experience and experiments. In a way, when you observe them to be successful, we try to imitate them gradually, and when we also get the success, it is going to be fixed with us and we also behave like that. Usually people are having role models in their life. Say some of the film actors have got role models, and that's how they started behaving and acting like them. Say, earlier days when Mukesh started singing, he used to have Saigal as his role model. When Shah Rukh Khan started acting, he used to have Dilip Kumar as his role model. And he used to imitate that fellow, that actor, and gradually started doing such roles, where how Dilip Kumar would have acted in such roles, he started acting in that and became gradually successful. And of course, then later they can have their own style also at times. So this is known as social learning which has been developed by Albert Bandura. So let's understand the next aspect in this topic, that is attitudes and job satisfaction. Attitudes are evaluative statements which may be either favorable or unfavorable. It can be either about objects or people or events. They reflect how we feel about something. That's what the definition given by Robbins. Let's understand what are the components of attitudes. There are three components of attitude. One is cognition. The second one is affect. And the third one is behavior. Now let's understand this by one example. Cognition is understanding. Say, when you say that I am highly qualified, I have got, say, 10 years experience and now I have got a new job. But somehow I agreed to do that job because I was not getting a job for some time, say for 6 months or so, and I needed that job badly. So I took that job, but I felt that I am not getting the right kind of pay I should get or what I deserve. So the understanding in your mind will be that I get low pay here. Then comes affect, that means feeling. So what the feeling I'll get when I'm getting low pay? I'll feel that these people are not justified in giving my low pay. They do not give what I deserve. So I am not happy about it. So unhappiness comes as the feeling for me working here. Then what can be my behavior based on this cognition and this affect? The behavior will be, I'll start looking for another job, because at that time I was not getting job for 6 months. Finally I arrived and I got that job and I started working. But since I feel that I am not getting the right pay, since I have got the unhappiness because of that, I'll start doing something to prevent this kind of feeling. So what I'll do, I'll start searching the job somewhere else. I'll put my CV in Naukri.com, Monster.com. I'll convey other friends that I am looking out for a better job outside. And that will be my behavior. So these are the three components of my attitude towards the job. So as we have seen, the attitude is either towards the object or towards the people or towards the events that have occurred in your life. So, based on these things, based on your attitude, your cognition, affect and behavior will be there. Now, job satisfaction is also an attitude. Here, you are having positive feelings about your job. As we have learned, or we will be learning in motivation, Herzberg has given us the certain factors known as motivating factors which leads to job satisfaction. And certain factors which are hygienic factors which will lead to a person not being dissatisfied with the job, they need not be necessarily satisfied with the job. When you have got self-esteem, when you have got promotions, when you have got self-actualization, when you have got certain people appreciating you, it will be a motivating factor. If the job itself is very interesting, you have got autonomy, you have got direct feedback coming from the customers, you have got the autonomy to get all the resources you need to do that job, etc., is going to create a positive feeling in you. You will become more creative and you will get job satisfaction. So it's an attitude. When you are having high job satisfaction, you will be naturally more motivated to do better and better, and you will be more creative. And it is likely that you will be more involved in your job. That's the degree to which an employee is engaged in and enthusiastic about performing their work. This is what we learn, job involvement, especially when employees are engaged. We have learned in the third chapter, employee engagement, where job involvement and job commitment was the important aspect. So, organizational commitment is again an attitude where there is a psychological attachment of the person to the organization and its goal. He is going to be loyal to the organization. He is going to be committed to the organization. He never looks for other job outside. So, employee turnover will be less if most of the employees are committed to the organization. They have got psychologically attached to the hospital, I mean the organization, in the form of, say, I am with organization always, and they see pride in becoming the part of that organization. They are loyal to their employer and they revere their employer. They feel that it is this employer whom we should never leave, and that's how organizational commitment will be there for them. And they are going to be committed to achieve the organizational goals with the best of their capabilities, and they will be highly motivated to do their work and more creative also. Now one of the important topic in the behavior of a person in an organization is perception. A perception is a process by which the individuals organize and interpret their sensory impressions in order to give meaning to their environment. Well, we have got 5 senses. With eyes, we see. With ears, we hear. With nose, we smell. With skin, we are going to have the tactile sensation and understand what is the texture of that thing, how it feels like, whether it is hot, cold, etc. And with tongue, we can taste. So, these are the 5 senses that we have got, and with these sensory impressions, we are going to interpret whatever is there in the environment. At times, what we see may not be the actual thing, but that's your perception. Well, when you see a rope in the dark, at times you may perceive it as a snake and you are afraid. At times what you hear may not be exactly what you have heard because of the noisy environment. It was a bit disturbed and you couldn't hear it clearly, but you interpret it in a different way than what actually it is. So, it is the sensory impression that a person is getting, and giving meaning to their environment is the perception. Now, there are various factors which creates this perception for a person. There are factors about perceiver, there are factors for target, and there are factors for context. And situational factors are there which can affect what is the perception a person is getting regarding that. Let's understand some of these factors. Perceiver, that means suppose I am tasting something, I am the perceiver of that taste. Suppose I have eaten a rasgulla, and after that if I am going to drink tea, even though tea is having sufficient sugar, but because I have eaten rasgulla prior to that, my perception about this tea is that it has got less sugar. So, it is not what actually it is less than that. Then comes some other factors in perceiver. Suppose I have been bitten by a dog in my childhood, and when I am going at night and a street dog comes near me, I start running. A street dog may not bite me, and my colleague who is coming with me goes as usual. He probably pampers the dog also, and nothing happens to him, but I am afraid because I was bitten by the dog earlier. So I am the perceiver of how the dog is going to behave towards me, and that perception is going to be different for me and for my colleague or for my friend, because he has not got any kind of such experience in past, and he was friendly with the street dogs earlier also in his childhood, so he is totally comfortable with it. So that's another aspect. One can give an example as a perceiver factor. So your past experience can be one of the things. Based on your sensory perception, at times you are not able to see properly. So suppose you have got a screen, then you are not able to focus properly on a particular thing. Or you have got nystagmus, then also you cannot focus and you see something different than what it is at times. Some people are having illusions and hallucinations because they have got some psychiatric problem. Because of some chemicals in their brain, they are seeing something which is not there at all. So that's the perception they are getting, even though it is not there. Somebody will feel that somebody is coming to kill you because he's got a paranoid schizophrenia. Now, anybody else going along with him is not getting that kind of perception at all. So the factors in perceiver are going to be very important for what kind of perception a person is going to get, which may be different totally from actuality. Similarly, target. What you see, what is the target, also is going to vary based on that, from your past experience, from the shape of that target, from the way that target comes in front of you after a certain period, and things like that. Suppose you are sitting in a train. There is opposite track also, there is a train. Both the trains are halting at a particular station, and the train next to you starts moving in the opposite direction than your own train, and you feel that your train has started slowly. So that's the target which is going to be affected by the perceiver's action. The target oriented perception may be different. Then come context in which you are seeing that object. If after seeing in the midst of all the round objects, if you are seeing one square object, it looks like a round object to you at times. Or it looks small, all the round objects are of black color and there is a white color object in the center which is of the same size, but you perceive it as a larger object as compared to the surrounding objects. So there's the context in which, the background in which you are looking also is going to affect the perception that you get. So various situations can affect your perception in different ways. There is an attribution theory of perception also, which gives in the form of distinctiveness, consensus and consistency. If something which is distinctive, then you have the perception differently. If there are multiple people telling you the same thing, at times you feel that it is not the right thing, but still due to consensus, at times you start feeling that this must be the true thing. For example, in a story you must have heard that when multiple people are telling that the dog is coming in front of you, even though it's a goat, then 3, 4, 5 people told the same thing, you start believing that it is probably a dog instead of a goat. Then consistency of the thing also is going to affect. For example, when a person looks at McDonald's, Mac something, then in the similar way there are 3, 4 words of the same thing, and then in the end there is machinery, but it is written like machinery, you are going to read like that. So consistently you are looking at one thing, and suddenly there is something which is looks similar and you think that it is this. Then comes common distortions in perceptions are selective perception. When you are going to listen to your near and dear one in a crowd, even though there is lot of noise, you can still listen to that person as a selective perception. But somebody else is talking in that crowd, you are not going to hear that. So it's a selective perception, because that person is important to you. Your ears are used to the voice of that person. Immediately you are going to listen to that. Then comes halo effect. Now what is this halo effect? Halo is something which you see behind the idol of God. It's a kind of light spreading behind the idol's head, and you revere that God. So similarly, whenever you are impressed with some positive characteristics of the opposite person, you start revering that person because of that, and then technically or with some other behavior he is not good also, you think that he is a good person. These things are occurring many times in our real life, and you are getting the halo effect of perception, which is leading to wrong decisions at times. For example, when the boy gets engaged with a girl and he loved the beauty of the girl for her eyes or for her good fair skin, and he start loving that girl, and while they go together, at times some of her behaviors are such which he may not like, but still because of the halo effect of some positive characteristics, he starts keeping those things aside and starts loving her further. When they get married, at times gradually the beauty of the girl fades, and then those negative characteristics which earlier he was just ignoring now start becoming more important for him, and that halo effect vanishes. Similarly, when a candidate goes for interview, if there are certain positive characteristics with which the interviewer is impressed initially, later whatever he answers regarding the technicalities of his job, at times he is not perfect, at times he is totally wrong, but that is being ignored by the interviewer, and that candidate is selected for the job. So that's a kind of halo effect which can occur on the perception side for the interviewer. Similarly, contrast effect is another way in which at times suppose there are circles of a particular color, say green color, and in the center there is of the same size pink colored circle is there, or blue colored circle is there, at times it looks smaller than the surrounding circles. That's due to contrast effect of the background, one can say. Then stereotyping is for a certain group of people, we believe that this is the characteristics this group of people is having. For example, for Marwadi, sometimes people say that they are all very, very misers in a way. For Kachis, one can say that they are usually very powerful in mathematics. Or usually, most of us used to believe earlier that males are more powerful in maths and science as compared to females, but because in those days, usually the males used to go for medicine and engineering, while girls used to go for arts and teaching profession in history, geography, social studies, etc. So this is a kind of stereotyping that we are making, which may not be true for all such people. So that also is a perception that people have developed over a period of years. All Parsis are, say 90% of Parsis are eccentric, maybe 10% are genius. This is again a stereotyping that we are making. So that's part of the perception which can lead to wrong kind of decisions for this kind of groupism of people's behavior or characteristics that we believe in.